We'd like to teach a little etiquette. It's a small thing, but life is made up of small things, really. Sometimes, just ask your wife, it's the small things in life that count. Did you remember her birthday? Did you remember her wedding anniversary? Small things, but... In Indian culture also, some people think that Indian culture is misogynist. There's another monster word for you. Everybody, all the men know what misogynist means? It's like the opposite of feminist. It's misogynist. That it's down on the female sex. But it's actually totally the opposite. And one of the manifestations of that is that at any spiritual gathering, there is a separation of men and women, but the women have the whole right side, and they can even sit up front, and the men are on the left side. So, this is a perfect atmosphere for doing that. So what we'd like to do is, you know, we're following a different culture, and it's a God-conscious culture. And some of the things, they help us, and all of the things, they help us in becoming Krishna-conscious. So we'd like to request all of you to comply with this. It's a little thing, but it's part of our culture. We should actually be proud of our culture. This is Aryan culture. You know what Adolf Hitler tried to say, you know, if you have blonde hair and blue eyes, you're Aryan, but he missed the mark a little bit. Aryan culture is superior culture, but it's based upon spiritual values in life. And we're being introduced to the real Aryan culture. The dress we wear, the fact that we eat with our fingers, little thing, but it's more spiritual than with knives and forks. And this is another thing that has actually even more meaning. So, because Satchinanda and Maharaj wanted to fulfill the evening, I've got a little exercise we're going to play right now. It's called musical chairs. Have you heard of musical chairs? No, okay. Anyway, the ladies are going to move over here, and the men are going to move over here. Satchinanda Maharaj said it would take 5 minutes. Let's see.
Было бы добро, чтобы все могло быть на семинаре, да? Именно было бы другим, чем окупленным, да?
Это
же было добро, и приезжали на обычность, чтобы нахуй, и вы находились, что это не будет
какого-то.
Статистика показывала,
что из 100
людей по 10
Have any of you ever noticed how one of the favorite things that non-devotees like to do is film devotees paying their obeisances? There's more pictures in newspapers and more video machines of devotees. There's just one trained on us now. Devotees paying their obeisances because it's totally foreign to them. They can't imagine bowing down to anyone in general, even God, but bowing down to another man or another leader or something like that. The funny thing is that it is an old tradition in the Catholic Church and even in Islam and even in the jungles of Africa. I've had personal experience. I went with the police commissioner of Lagos, Nigeria. He's a devotee, Arjuna Das, good name, to his village. And he's a kind of chief of the village, and everybody in the village did full dandavat. And I was surprised. But we should never ever think that we are following something that is in any way inferior to the animalistic, materialistic civilization today. Mahatma Gandhi was asked, what did he think of Western civilization? And he said, it would be a good idea. In other words, he didn't think they were a civilization. It would be a good idea if they could create one. But everything we do is of the highest spiritual technology, the highest scientific spiritual philosophy, including bowing down to Krishna, bowing down to the deities, bowing down to seniors. In India, young children get up in the morning, the first thing they do, very first thing they do, is they go and touch the feet of their mother and father. Do you have anything like that in Croatia? It may have been 150 years ago, but... Huh? Was there anything like that? 50 years ago? Well, that's still today. That goes on. Yeah. Okay, we're going to try and have a seminar on the Bhagavad Gita in between jokes and other things. I've noticed how you're going to have trouble keeping that camera trained on me. I run the 4-minute mile when I do my seminars, but years ago I saw devotees starting calling their lecture series seminars. I think it was a word that seminar, it was a catchphrase, it was a word that, oh, a seminar? That's much better than a lecture series, you know. And but in the professional world, a seminar is a little bit different than just a lecture series. And there are different tools that are used to help people retain the information. Actually, a seminar is more similar to the way you go through school. You know, the teacher's up front, he walks around, he asks questions, he has a blackboard. And so I'm going to try and do that. Now, I've got a few shortcomings. One is that I'm not in the best of health, so I have to see how my health, how my strength goes. Today, background is, many, many years ago, in the heavenly planets, there was a king by the name of Mahavisha, Maha, V-I-S-H-A, Mahavisha, in large letters. You can write it large, Tiana. All right.
Yeah, Mahavisha. So he was in the Surya Vansh, in the Yadu Vansh, Yadu dynasty, and he had performed many pious activities. He had performed many sacrifices, so he went to heaven. And while he was in heaven, there was a summer camp. It was a gathering, a large gathering. And at that gathering, Lord Brahma was also there. And also Ganga Devi. Ganga Devi is the personification of the Ganges River. And she is one of the most beautiful ladies within the whole creation. Naturally, the Ganges water is very sacred, and any personification of the Ganges is also going to be very perfect. So she was in that assembly of demigods along with their wives, and Mahavisha was also there, and he became attracted to Ganga Devi, her beauty. And then what happened is that the wind blew up and blew off all the garments of Ganga Devi. So she was, her private parts were revealed. Now, I know that would have been cool here in planet Earth, but in the heavenly planets, nakedness is considered very gross, and it's very much frowned upon. They do lots of other things, but nakedness is not respected. So all of the celestials turned their faces and, you know, hid their eyes. But Mahavisha, he couldn't take his eyes off of Ganga Devi. So Lord Brahma, he was very upset. This was a great offense. And he cursed Mahavisha that you will take birth in the material world as a human being. When somebody gets cursed to a low birth, they become one of us. So, anyway, Lord Brahma said, because he was a very... at least he had many, many years of austerity and piety behind him. He said, it will only be one birth, and then you will come back to the heavenly kingdom. So then Mahavisha asked, or looked around, actually he didn't ask, he looked around, and he found out that there was a very pious king which he knew about, Pratipa, and he asked if he could be born as the son of Pratipa. He didn't want to be born, you know, as any Tom, Dick, or Harry's son in lower suburbia, you know, with a mortgage and, you know, a small car and payments. And he wanted to be born in a good family. So he took birth as Mahavisha took birth as Santanu. Now, Ganga Devi, she also noticed that Mahavisha was very much captured by her beauty. So she left the assembly thinking of that. And while leaving the assembly of demigods and celestials, she happened to come across the Vasus, the eight Vasus. And they were in great distress. What had happened was that Dyau, who was the leader of the eight Vasus, his wife, a lot goes on in the heavenly planets, his wife wanted Nandini. Who knows who Nandini is? Nandini is the cow of Vasistha, Kamadhenu cow that gives unlimited milk and doesn't hit you in the stomach with her horns when you pat her on the back like the one we have over at the farm there. Anyway, so, you know, his wife had ordered him, and so he finally consented, and he, along with his brothers, went to Vasistha's place and stole Nandini the cow. So then when Vasistha returned to his hermitage, he understood that what had happened by his mystic vision, and he cursed the Vasus that they would, what? Be born as human beings, right? So they were very remorseful, and they went to him and bowed down and begged forgiveness, returned Nandini, and asked him to retract his curse. But the problem is that when a powerful sage, rishi, or brahmana speaks the truth, it's very hard to retract it. In fact, it can't be retracted. It can only be modified. So that's what happened. Vasistha agreed that seven of the Vasus would take birth, but they would immediately return to the heavenly planets again. But the eighth Vasu, Dyau, who was mostly responsible for the theft, he would have to stay for one full lifetime, and he would not be able to enjoy any association with women or sexual pleasure or whatever. So they requested Ganga Devi that, look, we don't want to end up in the womb of just anybody, because you never know, we might get aborted or something, you know, you never can tell down there. Mandavati was telling me how when he was in his mother's womb, his mother was drinking all kinds of alcohol and taking all kinds of spicy food, and said it was very uncomfortable. So Ganga Devi said, well, who's your father going to be? And guess who the father was going to be? Huh? Shantanu, right, exactly. So Ganga Devi then immediately said, aha, Mahavisha, my, you know, good friend. And so she agreed to become the mother of the Vasus. And that's what happened. Shantanu was born. He became a great warrior, a powerful Kshatriya king. He was out in the forest hunting. He came to the river Ganges, and all of a sudden he saw this beautiful Ganga Devi. And immediately he said, and you find this throughout the Mahabharata, oh dear maiden, what are you doing here alone in the forest? You appear to be unprotected. You know, very sweet words, but basically was, let's get married, honey. So that's what happened. They agreed to be married, and Shantanu immediately took her home to his palace and on the same day married her. And but she made one condition, that whatever I do, you cannot object. I may do anything, and you may think it's horrible, but you can't object to it. So then, and she also made another condition, that you can't speak harshly to me. So all ladies, you should make that a condition before you get married. But anyway, Shantanu was so attracted that he said, no problem, no problem. And eventually, after 1 year, a child was born. And Ganga Devi took the child in the next couple of days after birth, took it to the Ganges and threw it in the water. You know, Shantanu was a little put off. Wow, you know, infanticide. But he was so attracted by lust that he didn't do anything. He was afraid of losing Ganga. So that happened for 7 years in a row. Every time he got a son, Ganga Devi took it and threw it in the ocean, in the river. So finally, the eighth child, he just couldn't stand it any longer, and he's, you know, he jumped up and ran after her, said, "What kind of vicious woman are you, killing your own children, blah, 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 where's my son?" And she said, "Okay, you can have a son, but that's the end of our association. Actually, these are the Vasus, and I was giving them liberation. It wasn't cruelty, but now I have to return." So the child of Shantanu and Ganga Devi was Devavrata. Anybody know what his other name was? Devavrata? Huh? Loudly. Bhishma! There's a story about that. But so Ganga Devi took Devavrata back to the heavenly planets, and he got training from Parusaram, from Vasistha, from Shukracharya. He was trained up, and then he returned with his mother to the world, and Shantanu was out in the forest again, and he was at the Ganges River, or a tributary, not exactly the Ganges, but a tributary, and the river was completely, it was a big river, but all of a sudden there was just a little small trickle of water coming down. So he wondered what had happened, and he went up the river, and he saw that there was a dam built. But it wasn't an ordinary dam. It was a dam made from arrows. Somebody had shot the arrows so closely together that water couldn't seep through. Then he knew that it must be his son. He said, "Oh, Ganga Devi, where is my child? She came out. Here's your child." And he took Devavrata back to his palace. Then Shantanu, again, he was without a wife, and for a Kshatriya to be without a wife is like a duck to be without water, or something even, you know, this, Kshatriyas, they need to have a certain amount of encouragement from their wife, and Shantanu was looking for another wife. And one day, while in the forest, he came across Satyavati. Now, Satyavati, she was actually a daughter of a great king, but somehow or other she was cursed in such, not cursed actually, but through circumstances, she ended up as the daughter of a fisherman. Now, over here, where are we? Does anybody saw Vyasadeva? You can see here Parasar Muni and Satyavati. She was a fisherman's daughter, and I don't know if any of you have been to a fishing village. In India, they have lots of fishing villages in Puri and in other places. Do you have those here where everybody... You don't really have so much in the West, but everybody in the village smells like a fish. I mean, it's for real. So Satyavati, she was a beautiful lady. She had all, you know, divine qualities physically, but she had one problem. She smelled like a fish. So she found it hard to get dates. And so anyway... One day while she was rowing for her father's business, she was rowing people, ferrying people across the river, Parasara, who's a great sage, he came by, got in her boat. Now, he's a fellow traveler along with Narad Muni. He's a very great, powerful rishi. And he sensed that it was a very important moment, and he approached Satyavati and said, "I want to combine with you. I want to have union with you. She said, I'm a maiden. I'm not married. I can't. I have to maintain my virginity. And he said, do not worry. You will not be polluted. I have the power. And then he created an island in the middle of the river, clouded it with fog so nobody could see, and then he impregnated Satyavati with none other than Krishna Dwaipayan, the island. Krishna Dwaipayan means island. Veda Vyas. So Vyasadeva was the son of Parasara and Satyavati. So at that time, Parasara gave her the benediction that she would now no longer smell like a fish. She would smell like a lotus flower. And she had a heavenly, very intoxicating scent. So Shantanu was in the forest, smelt that wonderful scent, that wonderful odor. And he approached her, saw her immediately again. Oh, how are you here in the forest alone? You look unprotected. So he immediately went to her father and the fisherman and said, I'd like to marry your daughter. And, you know, I'm the king here, and you should just agree. But the father was a little tough. He said that you already have a son, Devavrata, and he's the prince regent. He will inherit your line. He'll be the next king. So then Shantanu tried to argue, and it didn't work out, and he left. Devavrata came to know about it. He went on his own to the fisherman's house and said, don't worry. I give you my word that your daughter's sons will ascend to the throne. He said, I don't believe it. Maybe you will hold up the truth, but your son's sons will later on claim that the throne belongs to them. So then Devavrata said, okay, I will remain celibate. I will not have any issue, any child. And then he became became Bhishma. There was a voice from the Akashvani, a voice from the sky. So Maharaj Drupada, he was a class friend of Dronacharya's. They were both disciples of Bhrigu, and they learned martial arts. And while they were class friends, they were friends. But Drona was actually a very poor Brahmana, and Drupada was from a very wealthy family. So after graduation, Drupada went back to his kingdom, and then Drona came by and said, you know, we were class friends together. Remember the class that we graduated, class of 48, you know, we're alumni. You know, I could use a little help here. I'll train your, whatever, train your children or something. And Drupada at that time, he made a mistake. He said, look, when we were kids, we were friends, but now you don't have anything, and I have everything. So how can there, you know, equals can be friends, but, you know, you're very poor. So Dronacharya was furious with that. He did not like that at all. So eventually he approached the Kauravas and agreed to become their military guru. Actually, Bhishma, it was Bhishma's desire that Drona become the military guru of all the Kauravas, including the Pandavas and the sons of Dhritarashtra. And after he trained them all, he desired to get some dakshina. You know, gurus, that's what they mainly do. They go around and collect dakshina, you may have noticed. They say a few spiritual words, and then they... No, not that bad. But anyway, Drona told his students, including Arjun and Duryodhana and the others, I want you to defeat Drupada and bring him here to me. And that's what they actually did. Of course, Duryodhana and his crew rushed in foolishly, and Drupada was very powerful, and he defeated them. But Arjuna and the Pandavas, they kind of waited and watched, and then they went in second, and they actually defeated Drupada, and they brought him to Drona, and Drona said, you know, I just did this to get even with the your insult to me, but actually I hold nothing against you, and let's share your kingdom. You have half, I'll have half, and Drupada could do nothing. He was defeated. So he agreed on that, but in his heart, he was furious. He'd been humiliated, insulted. So he performed an austerity, and I believe it was Angira. Is it Angira Rishi? Anyway, we'll fill this little spot in later on. Okay. I can't remember the sage, but the sage agreed to do a yajna for Drupada, whereby he would get a son who would kill Dronacharya. Kshatriyas didn't fool around. They, you know, they knew the soul was eternal. It's funny that the most ferocious soldiers in the world, they're not the Americans. They're not even the Serbians. It's not even the KLA. The most ferocious soldiers in the world are the Nepali Gurkhas. It's a historical fact. The British used them. The American Marine Corps had it recorded in one of their handbooks, one of their manuals, because they've got this idea that they're eternal. The soul is eternal. And if they die in battle, they go to heaven. So they go into battle. Yahoo! You know, they're not afraid to die. But anyway, he got this benediction that he would get two children, Drishtadyumna and Draupadi. They were born from the fire yajna. The yajna was performed. The priest said, all right, where's your wife? I'll give her the remnants of the fire sacrifice. And then the wife got up and said, actually, I'm not pure. I can't receive it. I've got kumkum on my body. I have perfumes, other things. I'm not completely pure. And the priest said, sorry, can't wait. And then they were born right from the fire. Out of the fire came Drishtadyumna and Draupadi. So, anyway, Urja and Arundhati, they were both given to Vasishtha, and they were daughters of Satyavati, and Drishyanti also was given to Shakti, married to Shakti. Surasena, now this is the Soma, the moon god dynasty. This is the Pandavas, the Kauravas, the Kuru dynasty. They're from the sun, but they're actually related to Krishna. And this is how Arjuna and Krishna are such close friends. It's one of the ways that they're close friends, and one of the ways that the Yadus and the Kurus are allies. King Surasena and Marisha, they begot Kunti and Vasudev. So they were like brother and sister. And of course Kunti's son was Surya through Karna, was Karna through Surya, sorry. And the two wives of Vasudev were Devaki and Rohini. Krishna was born to Vasudev and Devaki. Balaram was actually conceived in Devaki's womb. Balaram was the seventh child of Devaki, but just as Krishna was transferred by Vasudev carrying him in a basket, Balaram was transferred mystically to the womb of Rohini before Vasudev and Devaki had been put in prison. They had sent Rohini to Nanda Maharaj for protection because they knew something was going to happen. So Balaram was the son of Devaki, but he ultimately took birth from Rohini's womb, and Krishna, of course, was the son of Devaki, but he was later on transferred to Nanda Maharaj. So, but here Kunti, you see that she was ultimately married to Pandu. So what happened here was that Bhishma had taken a vow not to have any children. And Satyavati's other son, Vyasadeva, was a great rishi and sage, so there was no children there. And so she was very worried. She had two sons, Chitrangada and Vichitravirya, but from Shantanu. But Chitrangada, he was a powerful warrior. He actually was capable of being the king. He had a very powerful body. He was a powerful warrior. He was very righteous. And in that dynasty, he was exemplary king. But he was so famous that there was a Gandharva named Chitrangada. And he became very upset that someone named Chitrangada was becoming famous in the world. And therefore, he came down and challenged Chitrangada that, look, you know, this town ain't big enough for the two of us. And, you know, he had to, they had a fight. And that fight went on for many, many years. Actually, Chitrangada the human was a very good fighter. Generally, the Gandharvas are far superior to human beings. They're like the celestial equivalent of Rakshasas. They're just more powerful, more intelligent, etc. So eventually, Chitrangada was killed. Vichitravirya, Bhishma Dev, he arranged that wives for Vichitravirya. There were three sisters named Amba, Ambika, and Ambalika. Now, Amba, actually Bhishma went to the Swayamvar ceremony. He heard that these three princesses were being offered, their marriages were being arranged. So he went there and he just took them all away. There's different kinds of Kshatriya marriage, but the one that's actually respected the most is where the Kshatriya just walks in and steals the woman and fights with anybody who doesn't agree. We've had various groups in ISKCON who have, in L.A. we had a group of Kshatriyas, you know, they said, we're Kshatriyas, you know, we're, that walked around with guns protecting the temple and everything, and a lot of them had a number of girlfriends, and they thought that was being, all he had to do was the external, and then he could be a Kshatriya, you know. There's a lot more to it than that, of course, but Amba had already given her heart to Salva. And when Bhishma came in and stole the three sisters, Amba was very mortified. She was very upset. And she said to Bhishma, look, I promised my heart to Salva. You can't do this. So then Bhishma said, all right, you can go to Salva. So then she went to Salva and he said, you know, I don't take anybody's prasadam, and forget it. You know, you've been taken by another man, and I can't have anything to do with you. So, and it would have been too much for his ego also. Salva was a demoniac king. He was ultimately killed by Krishna. But So then Amba came back, and she was furious with Bhishma, and she ultimately got a benediction. She became Shikhandi, I believe. And she got a benediction that she would be able to kill Bhishma. And she was actually a woman, but she got the benediction that while she fought with Bhishma, she could be a man. I guess it was a demigod. No, it wasn't a demigod. It was some person got the facility where he could give her his manhood for a certain period of time. And so Shikhandi, who was Amba, ultimately did kill Bhishma. He didn't really defeat Bhishma, but at the end chopped off his head, it was Arjuna who actually defeated him. But Ambika and Ambalika, they were taken back and they were married to Vichitravirya. And Vichitravirya spent 7 years with his wives. He was a little bit of a woman's man, and he really didn't do his duty, and he spent 7 years cohabiting with his wives, but he didn't produce even one son. And that was a crime for a Kshatriya not to have any heir. So he got so engrossed in sex life. I've heard different stories. I heard one story that he just died from some sexual disease, or that he died from tuberculosis. Whatever it was, he died. And then Satyavati, again, she was in great anxiety because there was no heir to the great Kuru dynasty. So she called upon her other son, Vyasadeva, to impregnate Ambika. She tried first Bhishma, and Bhishma said, "No, Mom, I'm a brahmachari, fixed, no way." And so she couldn't convince him. So finally she called Vyasadeva. The thing was that she was in a hurry. She was in anxiety, and she didn't want the kingdom to be without a king. Vichitravirya was dead. Chitrangada was dead. So she wanted him to come immediately. Vyasadeva was in the Himalayas performing austerities. He told her, "Look, just give me 1 year. You have her do some austerities. I'll appear there as a beautiful man with jewels and robes and, a divine person." And she chose to have him come immediately. So he said, "All right, I'm coming." And, he was caked with mud, and he didn't do anything to maintain his body, which I guess it means he didn't evacuate either. He didn't clean himself at all. He had long matted hair. And, he smelled pretty bad. His teeth were as black as his body. And so Ambika agreed. She was thinking, "Well, okay, Devarena Sutotpatim, that's allowed, that your brother in a circumstance of emergency can beget children in your wife." Not in Kali Yuga, folks, but in other ages it was allowed. So she was thinking, "Well, I love my husband. How can I, just give him up? But I guess it has to be done. And anyway, Bhishma's a powerful warrior, and he's handsome, and I guess I'll agree." So she was waiting, and then all of a sudden, Vyasadeva showed up at her door, and Satyavati hadn't told her what was going on. So she freaked out. And Vyasadeva, he didn't waste a moment. He came over, he impregnated her and left. But she totally freaked out, closed her eyes, and so Dhritarashtra was born, blind. He was as powerful as 10,000 elephants. He was a brilliant man, but he was blind, so he couldn't be the king. So then Satyavati asked Vyasadeva again. He agreed, but this time with Ambalika. Ambalika was warned. She was ready. Vyasadeva came. She didn't close her eyes, but she turned pale white. She was totally frightened. So Vyasadeva impregnated her, but because she was so, she reacted so heavily to his presence, kind of an insult, great powerful incarnation of Godhead, Pandu was born completely white. Then Satyavati wanted to try a third time with Ambika. Ambika just couldn't take it. She dressed up one of her maid servants to look just like her. And Vyasadeva came. She was a poor lady. She was a humble lady. She had good qualities. She recognized the great sage. She served him very nicely, nice foods, music, this, that, whatever. And so Vidura was born. Although he was a Dasiputra, the son of a maidservant, but he was actually an incarnation of Yamaraj. So we have the three now possible, well, two actually, the two possible heirs to the throne. One is Pandu. Where's Pandu here? Huh? Oh, yeah, okay. Pandu and Dhritarashtra. Now, Dhritarashtra's blind. He cannot be the king. It's just not possible. You can't have a blind king. He can get cheated in so many ways, apart from other things. It's just inauspicious. So Pandu, although he was younger, Pandu was chosen to be the king. And Bhishma arranged that he marry these two wives, the Kunti. Kunti was the daughter of Surasena. Pardon me, is that right? Surasena. Kunti's the daughter of Surasena, but Surasena was a good friend of Kunti Bhoja. And Kunti Bhoja had no issue, so Surasena gave his daughter to Kunti Bhoja, and therefore Kunti got the name Kunti. So Bhishma arranged that Kunti would marry Pandu, and he thought that he should have more than one wife, so he went to the king of Gandhar and arranged for Madri to also be the wife of Pandu. And then he arranged for Dhritarashtra Gandharia. I'm sorry, Gandharia is the daughter of the king of Gandhar. And Madri, I forget her origin. But anyway, Gandhari, she's famous. Of course, Kunti is also very famous, both very famous ladies. Gandhari is one of the seven chaste ladies in the universe because she heard that her husband would be blind. So she thought, well, if I have eyes and my husband doesn't have eyes, I'll become proud. And then I'll insult my husband in some way and that'll spoil our whole marriage. So she put silk cloth around her eyes and voluntarily became blind. Her brother was Shakuni, the guy who caused the whole gambling match and ultimately was the catalyst for the whole Kurukshetra war. That gambling match and what happened in the gambling match in the assembly, Draupadi being insulted. Really, that was one of the strongest causes of the war, apart from the fact that Krishna had a plan. So, Dhritarashtra and Gandhari. Gandhari became pregnant. Kunti became pregnant. And, no, pardon me. Yeah, that's right. Yes. How did that work? Huh?
Yeah, that I know, but I'm just trying to think. Okay, Kunti became pregnant, and Gandhari became pregnant at the same time. Of course, the pregnancy of Kunti was... Pandu was a great king, and he was also a rishi, so although he defeated all the kings on the planet, but he wasn't attracted to opulent living. He did his duty as a king, but he actually he enjoyed living in the forest more, simple living. So that's what he actually did. He put Dhritarashtra in charge of Hastinapur, who ruled the kingdom, and he went and roamed the forests and went with his wives. He lived relatively opulently in the forest that he was taken care of by Dhritarashtra, but he just didn't like a material life or palace life or whatever. Unfortunately, while he was in the forest, he shot a deer, actually two deer, a deer and a doe. A doe means a female deer. And they were cohabiting, they were having sex. So he killed the male, and it turned out that this male was actually the deer and the doe were actually a brahmana, a sage, and his wife. They were so poor that, you know, if you ever think that, you know, you're poor, and here's an example of someone who was so poor, he was living in the forest, he didn't have his own hut, and he wanted to have a child through his wife, but all he could do was lie down in the forest, and that wasn't proper. So he assumed the form of a deer to cohabit with his wife, because that would be more natural for a deer to be having sex in the forest than a Brahmin and a Brahmini. So, you know, Pandu shot him and killed him. While he was dying, he cursed Pandu that you will, the moment you approach your wives for sex, you'll die immediately. And Pandu said, well, what's my sin? I'm a Kshatriya. It's my duty to roam the forests and kill animals and practice archery, etc. The Brahmin said, I don't blame you for that, but it is just common decency that you don't attack anyone when they are in the sacred act of creating progeny in their lawfully wedded wife or whatever. And even if it's an animal, you shouldn't do that. And then Pandu realized his mistake. And this is a theme that comes up throughout the Mahabharata and even in our lives. There are things that happen to us that seem to be beyond our control. And we wonder about them and try to figure out, why did this happen to me? And the Mahabharata uses the word destiny, or we say Krishna's desire, Krishna has a plan, but Mahabharata repeatedly uses this word destiny, that there's a powerful destiny that we're all part of. And Pandu made this big mistake, and he realized it. So then he went back to Kunti and Madri and told them about the problem. And for 12 years he lived as a brahmachari in the forest. But ultimately he began to think that if I don't have a son, who's going to perform sraddha ceremony? Who's going to worship the ancestors? I may go to hell. And he asked the sages and rishis in the forest whom he was associating with, and they said, yes, it's important for a husband, for a king to have an heir. It's important for any family. In fact, Chanakya Pandit says, putra hina griham sunyam, that family life without a son is void. So anyway, he became very much absorbed in the idea that he had to have children. So he approached Kunti and he said, look, choose any one of these sages, these Brahmins here. We'll you know, we'll make some arrangement and you'll have a son by them. And Kunti was a very chaste and faithful wife, and she, you know, she couldn't even think of embracing another man, even thinking of another man. It just was. And immediately Pandu came running, and Kunti screamed, and they ran down the trail to see what happened to the poor baby, and there was a huge pile of rocks that had become crushed to powder. The baby had fallen on the rocks and just crushed them all to powder, and that was Bhima. And then Pandu wanted a great fighter, and from Indra, Arjuna was born. Then Madri became a little jealous, you know. Kunti's got all these children, I have none. So Kunti agreed, and Madri got a little smart. She thought, Kunti's got three, and I don't know if she'll give me the mantra again, so let me get as much out of it as I can. So instead of calling one demigod, she called the Aswini Kumars, who are two demigods together. She got Nakula and Sahadev. Then Kunti was upset that she had been cheated and withdrew the mantra, and that was the end of the mantra dynasty. So Pandu has got his sons, the Pandavas, the five sons, and Dhritarashtra has... What happened was, when Yudhisthira was still within the womb of Kunti, Gandhari was also pregnant. But Kunti delivered first, so that meant her child was senior to any of Gandhari's children. Just in case, you know, Dhritarashtra, he may die, then who would take over the throne? The senior grandson. And in this case, Gandhari was hoping it would be her, but it wasn't. Yudhisthira was the oldest of all the Kurus. So Gandhari is one of the seven chaste ladies of the universe, but she became very envious of another chaste lady, and so she gave her womb a big womp, and a lump of flesh came out. So she was a great disciple of Vyasadeva. She called Vyasadeva what to do. And Vyasadeva said, you make 100 pots, break the lump into 100 parts, put it in ghee in the pots, and leave it there for, what was it? Long period of time. At least a year. And so she did that, and after that period of time, 100 sons were born. They also, Dhritarashtra had a relation with a maidservant, and Yuyutsa was born. Now that's interesting, all these sons of Gandhari, and here you see Duryodhana, Dushasana, and 98 other sons, and they had one daughter, Dushala. They had a son named Dushala, but they had a daughter named Dushala, and she was married to Jayadratha. But Yuyutsu, who came from the maidservant, seems like maidservants have good children, or I don't know what it is about maidservants, but Yuyutsara ultimately spoke up in favor of Draupadi in the assembly hall when she was about to be disrobed. He was the only one of the Kauravas who spoke up. And then when the war came, he fought on the side of the Pandavas. And after the war, he survived and performed the funeral rites for all his brothers. So what happened was that Pandu had this, he got these children from his wives, and he was maintaining his celibacy in the forest, but one springtime, in the forest, when all the flowers were in full blossom and there was beautiful scent in the air, He was wandering about, gathering tulips or something, I don't know. He was wandering about with Madri, and she had on thin cloth, silk cloth, and it was a little moist. It stuck to her body. The sun shone through it. The Kshatriya in him came out. He couldn't resist. Even though it was going to kill him, look at that. Even though it was going to kill him, he couldn't resist. In the Bhagavatam, it says that, that they, pasyana pina pasyati, they have eyes to see all the miseries of material existence, but they actually can't see because they're blinded by lust. Pandu, great king that he was, he fell victim to lust. And even Madri was, you know, she kind of, on the one hand, she freaked out. On the other hand, she was also feeling a little 12 years, you know, Brahmacharini. She wasn't, so she was kind of half pushing him off, but that only turned him on more. He got more aggressive, and finally he, you know, threw her down on the ground, and then he, you know, grabbed his heart and he died. So then Kunti and Madri were in great distress. Kunti was the oldest wife, and she wanted to ascend the funeral pyre along with her husband, but Madri insisted that she should do it because it, she was the cause of Pandu's death, kind of indirectly, or you can say directly, but not remotely. There was a greater cause remotely, but she was directly the cause of his death, and she couldn't live with that in her heart. And also, he died with her on his mind, and it was her duty to fulfill that last desire of her husband. This was how chaste the wives were, that they were constantly thinking of fulfilling the desires of their great devotee husbands. So anyway, Madri ascended the funeral pyre. Kunti remained with the Pandavas in the forest. They were trained up by the rishis in so many martial arts, etc. Then at one time, Vyasadeva came and said, you should take them to now to Hastinapur. They went to Hastinapur, and it was a little bit of a problem to explain how they took birth when Pandu was dead. But because Vyasadeva said it was true, everybody accepted it. And all the rishis also from the forest went along with Vyasadeva to Hastinapur in a big march. They went to Hastinapur and presented the five Pandavas. So they were accepted as divine sons of Kunti. And they were trained along with the sons of Dhritarashtra. Immediately, right from the very beginning, Duryodhana, he felt very threatened by the Pandavas. He constantly tried to defeat them, even kill them. Especially there was competition between him and Bhima. In fact, he tried to poison Bhima on a couple of occasions. What's another name for Bhima? What's another name? Vrikodara. What does Vrikodara mean? Anybody over here? Voracious eater. Voracious eater. Vrikodara means one who likes to eat a lot, which means probably most brahmacharis in ISKCON, but anyway, Bhima was, he was a voracious eater, but he was also super powerful. And Duryodhana tried several times to poison him, and it didn't have an effect. One time it had an effect, and he threw him in the Ganges, but he was taken by some snakes, some nagas, down to the subterranean Nagapatni Loka, or Nagaloka rather, and they had bitten him like anything, but it just so turned out that their biting was the antidote to the poison that Duryodhana had given to Bhima. So Bhima came out of that, and then he established a relationship with the king of the Nagas, Takshak actually, and Takshak was the one who finally killed Parikshit. But he also established a relationship with Varuna at that time, and they gave him this Varuni beverage, not Varuni beverage, it's a soma, a special drink that the snakes drink to give them, and the residents of the ocean drink to give them vitality and strength and etc. And they gave me, you know, a little jar of it, and you know, it was enough for 10 million snakes or something, and Bhima just guzzled it down and asked for more and more and more. And then he went back again about a week later. Everybody was worried for him that he had been killed, but you know, he knew that by that time they knew that Duryodhana and the Kauravas were trying to kill them. There was a lot of enmity or a lot of hostility between the Kauravas, the sons of Dhritarashtra, and the sons of Pandu. The Pandavas were not antagonistic towards the Kauravas. Bhima was quite uncontrolled in his anger, but Yudhisthira was so pious that he kept them all in check. And it's actually very interesting how these five brothers, or four brothers, were devoted to the fifth brother. And that was a very important point in their strength, that they followed their righteous brother. And even though it meant restraining their senses beyond what you could imagine, they really had to control themselves in so many circumstances, but they would not go, they would not go across, or they would not neglect righteousness or dharma or the right cause. And you find that in the Mahabharata a lot too. This theme that to act in a righteous way will always bring you victory. Initially, there may be problems, like the Pandavas went through so many problems. Ultimately, they were victorious. And it's the same theme is there from all the rishis, right, from Narada to Vyasa to Maitreya to Vidura to Markandeya Rishi. There's a whole description of Markandeya Rishi, who has been around since the beginning of creation. And they all stress this, both with the Pandavas, whom they all met while they were in exile in the forest, and in various other situations where they gave lectures to assemblies of kings. They stressed the need for virtuous living for human beings. And I think it's kind of a general theme that we ought to, you know, a lot of times, and we're going to discuss this in the seminar as we get into the Bhagavad Gita, about Arjuna thinking of his own material happiness. That was one of his greatest faults. He gave many reasons why he shouldn't fight, but his basic fault was he was thinking about his material happiness. I won't be happy if I do this. But that's not what you're supposed to be thinking about, whether you will be happy or not. You're supposed to be thinking about whether Krishna will be pleased or not. But that's like a specific thing. But in general, for society, for civilization, the world we can only live in this world in any kind of peace if we have righteous motives. If we're all looking to
exploit one another and deceive one another, and that's what you do find today. And it's not, we're born into a society like that from right from the very beginning, you know. Son, I want you to go out there and get what you can, you know. And it's there on television, it's there in the music we listen to, we get it from our parents, we see it all around us. Status quo, keeping up with the Agarwals or the Joneses or, whatever. But here in the Mahabharata, I can't, I'm thrilled at reading the Mahabharata. Really, it's I think it's a book that's going to be one of our best sellers because it's got intrigue, it's got mystery, it's got violence, it's got romance, it's got virtue, it's got moral and ethical teachings, and it brings everything together in one cohesive picture, one mosaic, one complete picture that you can understand. You can get a general understanding of where you are in the material world. If you try to look at things piecemeal, in little sections, you get bewildered. For a long time, I've kind of known that the absolute truth, you know, chant Hare Krishna, have no worries, be happy. And there's a few other things along the way, but it's relatively simple. But the relative truth is so complicated, dealing with people and all the trips and all the different modes of nature and all the different people in different modes with different agendas, all trying to exploit one another. It's hard to figure out what's going on in life. It's hard to survive. And the only way that you can actually survive is if you take guidance from, of course, Srimad Bhagavatam or Chaitanya Charitamrita, but the Mahabharata is something that can lead you into that. I didn't go into the actual, I don't really have time, so I didn't go into their, there's a whole story of their exile in the forest and the gambling match. But you can take it that the Pandavas were insulted in so many ways by the Kauravas, and ultimately the last thing was that they asked for Yudhisthira. He was so humble, he said, just give us 5 little villages to rule. And they wanted to stop, they didn't want to have war, they just didn't want to see bloodshed and fratricidal war at that, you know, war between brothers and gurus and teachers and etc. So Yudhisthira said, just give us, we're Kshatriyas, we have to rule something, you know, give us a little schoolhouse or, you know, at least a little village that we can rule over. And Duryodhana had the audacity to say, I won't give you enough land to drive a needle. In other words, take a needle and put it into the earth and see how much land it takes up. Not much. But Duryodhana said, I won't even give you that much. So there had to be a war. And Krishna went into the assembly. He went to Hastinapur, and there was an assembly to receive him in the sabha there, in Hastinapur. All the kings who were supporting Duryodhana, they all gathered. And at one point, Duryodhana wanted to capture Krishna. He actually had a plan. He and Karna and some others, they were going to just kidnap Krishna. They thought they could kidnap him. And so Krishna just said, you know, ha, 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 ha. And he showed his universal form. You know, he became huge in size, and he showed his universal form. Still, they couldn't get the message. So the war was inevitable, and the Bhagavad Gita is just half an hour before the actual killing begins, Arjuna's last lamentation, his last doubt, and the second chapter really gives you a perspective of how Krishna, when I was in Los Angeles in 1970, there was a clinical psychologist, his name was Al Grierson, and he wrote a book, which Prabhupada kind of appreciated a little bit. It was all about how Krishna was the supreme clinical psychologist and Arjuna was his patient, and how he was amazed how Krishna was an expert, what would you call him, therapist, and he was bringing his patient, and he marveled at what techniques Krishna was using to bring his patient along. So the second chapter gives you a kind of overview of how Krishna leads Arjuna out of illusion, and he expands in the later chapters on the same details, but the essence is there. Wow. Arti's already gone. I was expecting the conch would blow and the seminar would be over and I'd be cut off. And okay, are there any questions? Anybody has any questions?
Don't everybody speak all at once, please. I can't handle more than one question at a time. Yes, loudly.
When I read Mahabharata, I noticed that there is some different stories that are not same. For example, when the Vasishta and Vishwamitra was arguing about that Nandi cow.
Yeah.
I read in Ramayana different story. So can you explain a little bit about how is it that different stories about this, one subject matters?
No.
I know that there's a lot, there's different versions of the Mahabharata, and some of the stories, let's take the Ramayana, a better example. There's a Ramayana by Valmiki, and there's a Ramayana by, what's his name? Tulsi Das, Tulsi Ramayana. Now, in the Tulsi Ramayana, there's all kinds of things that are not there in the Valmiki Ramayana. Like this Lakshman Rekha, you know, where Lakshman says, you know, don't cross this line, Sita, and you will be saved. And, you know, and Robin comes and boom, you know. That's not there in the Valmiki Ramayana. It's concoction. And there's various other things. The Mahabharata, there are many different versions of it, some shorter, some longer. This version of Krishna Dharmas, it misses out a lot of the small details of different stories. It just gives you an overview and then goes on to the next stage. And it's kind of like moving down a water slide, you know, it moves really quickly. It's really, I like it that way in some ways. But I'm not qualified to explain. Vasishta had a Kamadhenu cow. Now, the one that the Vasu stole, whether that was the same one that Vishwamitra stole, I'm not sure. It's likely that he didn't have two, he only had one, so it's likely that it was the same cow, because Vishwamitra didn't get away with it either. You know, he was defeated because of it. In fact, it was proven at that point that Brahma Tejas is far greater than Kshatriya Tejas, that brahminical power, the power of purity, the power of mantra, austerity, is far greater than weightlifting, you know. But apart from that, I know those two different stories. Whether there's a difference in the cow, I don't know. Any other questions? Yes, loudly, please. Sanjaya. Now, Sanjaya's interesting character. He was actually a Sudra, but he was a disciple of Vyasadeva. So he got his mystic powers from Vyasadeva. And because he was a disciple of Vyasadeva, he was full of relevant spiritual instructions. So he became dear to Dhritarashtra, because Dhritarashtra, although he was blind, and although he was... Dhritarashtra's biggest plot problem was he knew the truth, but he just couldn't change himself. Does that ring a bell with anybody here? We all kind of have that problem. We know what the truth is, you know. 16 rounds, 4 regulative principles, devotional service. That's the standard given by our acharya. But we have trouble following. And we keep struggling, and if we keep on struggling, we'll reach perfection. Abhyasena tu konteya vairagyena cha griyate. By constant practice, we can become perfect with the help of the devotees and Krishna. But anyway, Sanjaya, Dhritarashtra liked to hear from Sanjaya. He liked to hear from Vidura also. At one point, Dhritarashtra became furious. He was hearing constantly from Vidura. What happened was when Duryodhana was born, there were tremendous inauspicious signs. Donkeys began to bray. You know what donkeys braying are? Well, it's a donkey brain. I don't know the English word, you might not know. But jackals were howling. Blood was coming from the sky. Birds were flying backwards. There were all kinds of far-out things were happening. And everybody, especially Vidura, said, "Hey, this kid's bad news, Drit. You know... throw him out." He was warned by Bhishma, he was warned by Kripacharya to destroy the sun, to get rid of him, because it wasn't just, you know, a little twitching in his ear or something. It was, there were some real ominous bad signs. But Dhritarashtra couldn't do it. He just couldn't do it because he was thinking, "My son, my boy, how can I do this?" He was sentimentally attached. He knew they were right. He also saw the signs. He knew the scriptures. But he just couldn't follow the instructions. So, at one stage, Vidura kept telling him what was good for him, and he just got pride. And he told Vidura, "You know, you are always favorable to the Pandavas. What about my sons? Why do you always discourage me? You leave the palace. I don't need you." So at that time, the Pandavas had just gone to the forest for exile. And Vidura thought, "Well, I'd like to go on a pilgrimage too." You know, he actually liked going to the forest. It wasn't an austerity for him. So he immediately left the palace and prepared to go to the forest and join the Pandavas. And he actually did that, and he was with them. And then within a day, Dhritarashtra realized his mistake, and he sent Sanjaya after Vidura and begged him to come back, and he apologized, and Vidura consoled him. But that was happening all the time. Dhritarashtra just, you know, when Krishna showed the universal form, everybody in the assembly were blinded by that form.